Chapter 5. Drop 5. Pour on the energy. Be the honeybee. Quote, among the uncommonly good souls, there are still gradations. And the best good soul is one who accepts an insignificant asset of a person and magnifies that good quality. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.4.12 purport. At this point, you have become familiar with the first four steps. Pause. Reflect, accept responsibility, and reconnect, and should now have moved to the other side of your conflict. It's now time for us to show you how to utilize those moments of success to start building an extraordinary relationship. Drop 5 of the rescue remedy, Pour on the Energy, calls not for drops, but mega doses, poured on. Apply liberally and consistently and watch the health and vitality of your relationship soar. This final step has both healing and transformational properties that not only complete the conflict resolution, but also stand alone as a daily practice that will change your whole life. As a reactive formula, this last drop has the power to minimize and dismantle conflict situations. And as a proactive formula, it both deepens and strengthens your relationship.
Time to celebrate. We are often unaware or unconscious of our progress. This is frequently true in the context of devotional service itself. Like me, you probably shudder to think what you would be doing now if it wasn't for the mercy of the pure devotee. I know for certain that I would be existing in a state of not-so-blissful ignorance, suspended between hankering for what I want, lamenting for what I have lost, and wondering why my life was not turning out like the romance novels I devoured in my youth. When you have made your way through the first four drops, however imperfectly, it really is time to celebrate. Reflect upon the following for a moment. Isn't it a fact that every time you paused, you gained a victory over your enemy, anger? Isn't it also true that every time you attempted to reflect and empathize, you crushed your false ego and fed your authentic ego? When you accepted responsibility to do whatever it took to work through a conflict, you displayed great commitment, maturity, and strength. Reconnecting with your higher self and working cooperatively to come up with new alternatives to solve your problems indicated your creativity and intelligence. Are you getting the picture? Success breeds success. By energizing your successes, you will get more of them.
Pour it on. Instead of waiting around for the next inevitable upset, take every opportunity to build upon the moments of success you have already experienced while you have been working together through your issues. Pouring on the energy involves acknowledging and energizing each other for all the great qualities you have both displayed in the process. Unfortunately, this simple but revolutionary concept runs against the grain and collides with our general tendency of minimizing or dismissing those important victories, those defining moments of success. Instead, our negative default setting kicks in and drives us to focus on what's lacking. We hanker and lament for what is lacking now, all that is lacked in the past, and worry about how the future may continue to lack. This attitude cultivates negativity and only perpetuates the cycle of conflict and frustration. Pouring on the energy focuses on success, on taking those seemingly insignificant molecules of success and magnifying them. Here's how it works, and it's very simple. After you have completed the first four drops and have dissipated your conflicts, take the time and energy to acknowledge each other. It could sound something like this. Quote, thanks for sticking with the process and understanding where I was coming from. I know it was hard for you, but you really got into my shoes and saw how it was happening for me. This means so much to me. Get the idea? The more genuine, heartfelt, and specific, the better. why we fear encouraging others. Quote, in marriage, let each partner be an encourager rather than a critic, a forgiver rather than a collector of hurts, an enabler rather than a reformer. H. Norman Wright. As devotees, we are naturally wary of giving and receiving praise or false praise. We worry and fret about puffing up each other's false egos. However, although this can be a genuine concern, such a mentality leads us into a type of scarcity consciousness. This can adversely affect the very depth of our relationships, making them impersonal and dry. It goes without saying that in the materialistic context, false flattery and praise does happen. People do praise each other with ulterior motives, to manipulate and exploit for gaining sense gratification. We rightly fear this. Notwithstanding, when we neglect opportunities for encouraging others, we miss out on the true value of using such appreciation to inspire others to live up to their true potential.
Scarcity mentality and impersonalism. I have often mused that we have a similarly dysfunctional mentality around the power of prayer. I was brought up as a good Catholic. We prayed for anything and everything under the sun. God was indeed our order supplier. From a top grade at school to a new bike, I prayed for things I needed or wanted. My mother prayed constantly for our material success and our safety, so I had a good role model. When I became a devotee, I was suddenly confronted with the selfish nature of my prayer habits. I realized that I had been asking God to serve me. This prompted a huge paradigm shift. I began to take pleasure in serving God and trusting that He would always take care of me. However, I simultaneously threw out all personal prayer in the process, the proverbial baby with the bathwater. It took me years to get in touch with any form of personal prayer again. We may have a similar misconception around actively encouraging others or ourselves. We are worried about building up false egos. If your praise is false, empty, or manipulative, you do need to be concerned. But just as there is genuine, healthy prayer in our Vaishnava tradition, there is also a myriad of healthy ways of encouraging ourselves and others that will feed our motivation and inspire bhakti. And let's face it, unless we have attained the stage of pure, unalloyed devotion, we all want and need this kind of positive encouragement and feedback to grow in our devotional service. His Holiness Radhanath Swami relates an experience that illustrates this fear of praise mentality perfectly. Quote, I once told an ashram leader that one of his mentees was a great singer, and I just loved the prayer chants he leads in the morning. As I expressed my heartfelt appreciation for his students' musical talents, I saw the leader alarmed. Oh, never tell him he's a good singer. He gravely expressed concern. He needs to be humble, and if you speak all good things about him, he'll be spoiled and may get puffed up. I reasoned, but how will he feel encouraged? To which the leader snubbed me. You don't worry about that. These boys need to be tough and disciplined, not pampered and spoiled with praise. I protested. I agree we shouldn't flatter them, but there are certainly ways of encouraging positively. While urging him to be prayerful and humble, we can also appreciate his devotional singing, and these kind words will go a long way and help him sustain his other services. I told my ashram friend that as a guide, he may also alienate his students if he withholds honest appreciation and only admonishes them. I helped him to envision a future scenario where we lose this talented member because no one encourages him here. He may either leave or go away to another ashram with bitterness in his heart. Do we really want that? My concern seemed to make sense to my friend. He trusted me and soon rectified his relationship with his counselee. Let's not be miserly. Shower appreciation when it's due and encourage all. When we see others who are gifted and talented, we naturally want them to use these gifts in devotional service. Many individuals are unaware of their true potential, and a few genuine words of encouragement by others can make a huge difference in their spiritual journey.
You can choose. There may be a need to stress once more that having a successful relationship doesn't mean that there will never be any conflict. Srila Prabhupada told us to forget utopia. He urged his household of disciples to live together peacefully and happily, but he warned us that there will always be waves in the material ocean. The golden rule to remember, and this one needs drumming into our heads. It's not conflicts that damage relationships. It's how we choose to respond to our conflicts, with choose being the operative word. Abandoning our fly mentality. Quote, Srila Prabhupada would see the spark of any sincerity in a person's heart and dismiss all his other bad qualities and just try to fan and kindle that spark into becoming the fire of love of God. Radhanath Swami, Vyasa Puja Lecture, 2010. The energy principle is strikingly simple. Whatever we give our energy to, we get more of, and that's it. Start giving your energy to even the smallest measure of success, then fan that spark and you will get more of the same. To achieve this, we have to abandon our stubborn fly mentality. Even when entering a beautiful and fragrant flower garden, the fly will search out something rotten. He will continually buzz around thinking, I must seek out the stool. It must be here somewhere. If I look hard enough, I know I can find it. Whatever the situation, no matter how bright, clean, and pure, the fly can't shake off his stool-finding mentality. How many of us resemble that fly, and how damaging can this attitude be to our relationships and our spiritual lives? Our Vaishnav culture is brimming with warnings to be careful of offenses against devotees. But often we forget that those nearest and dearest to us are included in this warning. We may bow and scrape, showing the greatest respect to senior Vaishnavas, sannyasis, and gurus, but at the very same time treat our family members or other ordinary devotees with either careless familiarity or outright contempt.
A Christian monk, Thomas A. Kempis, warns about this criticizing mentality in the 13th century work Imitation of Christ and urges us to look inward. Quote, try to bear patiently with the defects and infirmities of others, whatever they may be, because you also have many a fault which others must endure. If you cannot make yourself what you wish to be, how can you bend others to your will? We want them to be perfect, yet we do not correct our own faults. We wish them to be severely corrected, yet we will not correct ourselves. Honeybee training. Quote, a devotee never finds fault with others, but tries to find his own and thus rectify them as far as possible. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.13.33 purport. Are you ready to cast off your old fly body and get into training to become the honeybee you really are? Srila Prabhupada repeatedly requested his followers to imbibe this key Vaishnav principle. Tamal Krishna Goswami relates an example when urging his own disciples to see the good in each other and to work in harmony. Quote, what is Krishna trying to teach us? He is trying to teach us that each of us should just learn to get along. So many times I saw examples. Srila Prabhupada would have to settle disputes between devotees. Many, many times. We had one example. I had this treasurer, you know, a very difficult person. This person would take all the Sankirtan money, and immediately after getting the money, he would close the treasury. We couldn't get any money for buying food or for buying the deities things. And when the weekends would come, he would immediately disappear. So there was no money. I had practically pulled out my seeker. There was just so much frustration because I was in charge of the temple. Finally, I went to Srila Prabhupada and said, this is impossible. this person is really impossible. Srila Prabhupada said, what is his crime? I said, his crime is that as soon as he gets all the collection, he closes the treasury, and on the weekends, he disappears. Prabhupada said, very good treasurer, very good treasurer. He said the first qualification of a good treasurer is he doesn't like to spend money. And I said, so that's the end of my complaint. Tamalkrishna Goswami ended his recount by succinctly summing up the difference between criticism and what he alternatively termed positive criticism. Quote, positive criticism is when you have no malice in your heart, when you try to correct a person, when there is not the slightest malice in your heart, that's positive criticism. The key to constructive criticism, and there is a time and a place for it, is to have no malice in your heart. Too often we are pots calling kettles black, with varying degrees of the malice factor, and our recipient definitely feels the weight of our intentions. Of course, there is and will always be a time and a place for tough love, the tough love approach. Think about Vidura urging Dhritarashtra to retire to the forest and stop relying on the mercy of the Pandavas. Vidura chastises his brother with harsh words, and it works. There was no malice in the heart of Vidura, only love and concern for his elder brother, and this is the defining principle. No matter how strong our words, if our intention springs from a place of love, the recipient will feel it.
When your best lecture just doesn't work. Quote, men marry women with the hope they will never change. Women marry men with the hope they will change. Invariably, they are both disappointed. Albert Einstein. Sometimes we itch to give the perfect lecture to our spouse, kids, and whoever else we would dearly love to fix. I speak from realization, as I have been there 1,000 times. It's not that we should never be able to guide and counsel others, but if your best lectures, dripping with profound wisdom, are not working and end up as just another ingredient of the conflict soup, you may need to examine your heart and reconsider how best to demonstrate your love. When Srila Prabhupada gave the sauce, as we used to call it, he knew the recipient would generally take it because there was no material motive behind the apparent criticism, only love and concern. Conversely, when we try to imitate this giving of the sauce, it often seems to backfire drastically. Shrutakirti Das relates that when he was with Srila Prabhupada as his servant, Srila Prabhupada rarely chastised him, knowing how sensitive he was, sensing that he would not be able to take it. I would hazard to guess that our motives for correcting others are more often than not of the mixed variety, and we therefore end up with less than desirable results. Start building miracles from molecules. Quote, everyone should be friendly for the service of the Lord. Everyone should praise another's service to the Lord and not be proud of his own service. This is the way of Vaishnav thinking, Vaikuntha thinking. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.12 purport. When you practice the habit of energizing success in others, even if it appears that you have very little to build on, you take your relationship to a higher level. Instead of searching for faults and focusing on failures, practice building upon even the smallest whiff of success. When you think about it, this is how it probably was at the beginning of your relationship. You donned your blinkers, put on your rose-colored glasses, and saw all the wonderful things about your spouse. Looking for faults just wasn't on the menu. Intuitively knew this would have been counterproductive to developing a healthy relationship. In retrospect, you could argue, back in the day when we were basking in the throes of early love, we must have been a little deluded or imbalanced. But now that I know what he or she is really like, I've woken up. To what extent this reasoning holds true is hard to say. But one thing you can know for sure is that your focus has definitely changed. You are now acutely aware of or even searching for faults. Sadly, if you continue down this track, your relationship will reflect more of what you don't want, faults and problems.
Getting back on track. I remember one devotee relating to my husband that his wife had dramatically changed since their marriage. "She is not the same girl I married," he complained. "When we were first married, she used to speak to me so sweetly. Now she snaps at me most of the time." My husband listened to the devotee and then gently asked him if his wife had any good qualities, to which he nodded. My husband then requested him to write down all the positive things he could think about his wife. This devotee soon came up with quite a substantial list, which included things like, "She listens to my problems and my dreams. She cleans our house. She is super organized. She laughs at my jokes. She puts up with my mess. She encourages me in my spiritual life." Perhaps you could start giving energy to some of the positive things she is already doing, my husband suggested. The young husband looked thoughtful. "Yes, you are right. I never really show my appreciation for what she does. I guess I thought that by pointing out what she could be doing better, I was helping her." He then agreed to focus on and acknowledge all the wonderful things his wife was already doing. A few weeks later, he reported the results. At first, she was quite suspicious, but after a while, when she saw and felt my sincerity, she began to accept my acknowledgements, and now our relationship is back on track.
So don't worry if it doesn't come naturally at first. Keep practicing, and you will soon be dancing through the drops. The end and a new beginning. Congratulations! You have now learned how to apply the 5-drop rescue remedy. We sincerely hope that you are now feeling optimistic and excited about the prospect of transforming and strengthening all your relationships.
Let this book be a guide and manual for you. Read it, share, and study it together. Practice the 5 drops consistently, and above all, don't get discouraged if you bungle it from time to time, as you most certainly will. Just keep taking the medicine. Pause, reflect, accept responsibility, and reconnect to who you really are. Then celebrate, acknowledge, and energize your success. Follow this prescription and repeat when needed.
Where to next? Chances are that if you're listening to this, you may have already completed our online training course. If not, sign up for it now. Use it to consolidate and expand on what you've already learned from this short book.
You can sign up for the course at KrishnaConsciousRelationships.com. Also, please join our Facebook group. In the group, you can share your experiences and ask questions from us, as well as the hundreds of other devotees that make up our community. If you go to Facebook and search Relationship Rescue Remedy, the group will come up. Click on Join and we will add you to the group.
We wish you all success implementing the 5 drops and look forward to meeting you either in person or in our online community. Hare Krishna.
See you there.